and welcome to The Hearing, our music review show. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I am Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, of course, this is our last episode of 2019, so we're starting with our best of the year list. We do a best and worst on Zombie Takeout, but since we pick almost all the albums we review, a worst would be really difficult.
Yeah.
There was one that I was undecided about this year. There were two that you didn't recommend. I don't think we could come up with a worst five. So we just do best. You start this one. I started on Zombie Takeout.
Yeah, I was thinking of just going chronologically, honestly, instead of ranking them, because I think it would be, really hard to put a number in. And so we began the year with Jeff Buckley's Grace. It's an album that I listened to a lot the first, I think, few months of the year.
I thought that would be higher on your list, to be honest.
Yeah, I said I'm going chronologically.
Okay. Yeah. my number 10 is King of... I'm not going chronologically. King of the Surf Guitar by Dick Dale. It was a real revolution.
Agreed. That is on mine, too. Jeff Buckley's Grace, if I had to have pared it down to a five, that was an easy one to would have stayed.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Dale's, maybe, I'm not sure, but I loved it and couldn't kick it off.
What's your number nine?
Then, of course, we moved into Pearl Jam's No Code, which is another one that I probably would have kept if I was a top five.
Well, yeah, I'm sure Pearl Jam would have made your top five.
It might have been, between this and the next one to see which one was going to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another one too. So it's up there. It's easily the top three for me.
My number nine, another one I think is going to be on both of our lists, Power Station by The Power Station.
It did not make
mine. Oh, it didn't. Okay. There's going to be one surprise on your list for me then.
Yeah.
What's your number nine? Oh no, you did number nine. You go first. What's your number eight?
Fight between No Code and this one for best of the year. It's David Bowie's Scary Monsters. It's just good God.
And my number eight is Outlandish Demore by The Police. I should mention, before we started recording, about a half hour before, you messaged me and said you couldn't pare your list down to five.
That's right.
You needed 10. So I just quickly padded another five on mine. So not a whole lot to say about the bottom five for me.
Next, moving on for me, be Frank Zappa, Zootalores.
There's a surprise. Did not expect Zappa on your list.
Yeah. Gotta love Frank. And I don't know if it would have made it if it was just a five, but kicking it off in favor of something else was kind of tough too. So.
Oddly, given I've been a Zappa fan since the mid-90s, he did not make my list.
No.
My number seven is Stain by Living Color.
Yeah, that one was another tough one to not put on. Mm-hmm. That and Power Station, I really loved. It was kind of like, but I've got to pare it down, man.
Number six.
Let's see. Number six. Oh, this one probably would not have made it if it was a top five, but I just love this album so much. Mars Volta, Francis the Mute.
Not surprising. It's one of the ones you picked. I'm sure I knew they were all going to be on the list. That would have been your number six, I think, of the ones you picked.
Yeah, it number six would be in the bottom five of the if I were doing this in.
Mm-hmm. This one surprises me on my list because I've been a fan of these guys since college. Big fan, one of my absolute favorite bands, but at number six would not have made my top five, Age of Unreason by Bad Religion.
Well, that was another tough one. I was like, I had to kick them off.
Number five?
Let's see. Moving on. Another one that's just, this was essential college soundtrack for me. Ministry, Land of Rape, and Honey.
And this is my number five, essential high school listening for me, Among the Living by Anthrax.
Oh, that was another one. It was like so good. moving on for me, I went with Metric Fantasies.
I went with Parlor by Dorang Violeta. Loved that album since 2001. It was great rediscovering it at the when we reviewed it.
I remember enjoying that one a lot too. In fact, you know what? Looking back, because we don't have the same list that we have for Zombie Takeout of like what we've done exactly. I was like, Jeff Buckley was this year?
Yeah.
I was kind of shocked by that. Like a lot of that, you know, the early stuff, I was really shocked by.
Number three.
And this one could easily be in my top three. It's definitely my album of the year of what's been released this year, and that is Chesky's Sad Fat Luck.
My number three is Rhinoceros by Calvo Louise. It was my number one for a long time until we got to some, until we came back from the break. It was my number one.
Oh, yeah. And then we have, of course, this should be a surprise. We have tonight's album, spoiler alert, Jethro Tull's Aqualung.
Glad I went second. That's why I chose to go second. My number two is Just Fred by Fred Schneider. Such a wonderful surprise. Fred Schneider doing punk. What's your number one?
That was it, Jethro Tull.
Oh, Tull was your number one. What was your number two then?
You skipped Chesky.
Oh, okay. We got a little confused. We got, there were some crosswires there. My number one.
Well, we shared a few, remember?
Okay, yeah. There were, some got just crossed.
Like my skipped Dick Dale in the middle there.
Oh, and, that's where we got, you skipped Dick Dale. Okay. That's where I got confused. My number one, Aqualung by Jethro Tull. Just a quick tangent, something we discussed a couple weeks ago, I should say, in reference to this album. We've already discussed this, but when we decided to put this on the list for this week, you had said we're finally getting back to some prog. And at the time, I was listening to a lot of Punch Brothers and a lot of St. Vincent, and it occurred to me, there's prog in other genres.
Well, sure, but this is prog with the capital.
Well, yeah, this is prog rock. But, you know, Punch Brothers list them, you know, label themselves as prog bluegrass. I would say St. Vincent is progressive progressive pop. In reference to you saying that we were getting back to some prog, I think Chesky is progressive hip hop. That album is absolutely prog.
Oh, yeah. And then his latest, Sans Soleil, is just even more out there.
Yeah. I would say, Flaming Lips are progressive something.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly which genre. Maybe country. But just something that occurred to me, there is prog in other genres. Just a food for thought.
On to this. Anything about your, I mean, we could also talk about our Spotify raps.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, not surprisingly, Bandmade was my number one artist of the year for 2 years in a row.
Chesky was mine for this year. Mitski was mine from last year, by the way. But my artist of the decade was, of course, St. Vincent.
Okay, good call. Mine was Bandmade, which surprised me given that I've only been a fan since 2015. I listened to them a lot.
Well, were you on Spotify back?
Back in, I think 2011 I started with them.
Oh.
Yeah, I go back to 2011 with Spotify. So, yeah,
Bandmade was my... Same here. When I started with Spotify is when Love This Giant came out.
Uh-huh. That was how I knew I'd been on Spotify longer than I realized, because I had that in my playlists, and you were the one who told me about it many, many years ago.
Yeah.
Because of David Byrne, and you were already, I think that's how you found out about St. Vincent.
Yes. Yes.
Was it because of she'd worked at Byrne.
And that's when I just went through her whole catalog, and then by the time I was done with the catalog, she came out with self-titled, and it's like, what are those things of how they work out?
I think my other top artist, I don't remember all five. It was Bandmade. Cake was in there. Boingo. Squeeze, because there are like two or three songs of theirs I listen to a lot. Apparently, it cuts off in November because there's no St. Vincent or Punch Brothers, who I've been obsessed with for the last couple of months.
Mine's a local rapper named Serengeti, he's pretty much the Herman Melville of hip hop, I would say.
He's on our list. We'll be getting to him eventually.
I don't even know how we break it down, because like his story goes for, well, at least the story of Kenny Dennis goes like 8 chapters at least, or 8 albums or nine albums. It's insane. It really is insane. It's not just like a... But I'm trying to think. Metric was also on mine in my top five.
Calvo Louise was the one I couldn't think of. They're my second artist of the year. Cake, Squeeze, and Boingo. Top songs: Hide and Seek by Band-Aid, Pictures of Matchstick Men by Camper Van Beethoven.
Really?
The Camper Van Beethoven song I listen to the most is a cover, oddly enough.
Yeah, I had a chance. I'm kicking myself because I missed out on seeing him. He was doing like a double bill where he opened as Camper von Beethoven, or opened as Cracker and then closed as Camper von Beethoven.
Nice.
But I could not make it to the show, unfortunately.
Also, I have my top song's "Long Line of Cars" by Cake, which has become my favorite Cake song. It was Symphony in C.
I'm not sure how they compute the top songs, because I listened to mostly the whole album. So, but them taking a song off the album, really, I mean,
Maybe they just picked one that, maybe there's one that you lean a little more toward.
sometimes I don't think so. I think it's when I'm compiling a list or making a decision. Sometimes I'll just go back and listen to a song again. So, I mean, I think it was that. So I didn't really pay attention
And
to which songs they took.
the last two of my top songs, Pulling Muscles from Rochelle, one of those few Squeeze songs I listen to a lot, and The Sign of Fire by The Fix, the only song of theirs I listen to regularly.
Wow. So you have a set number of older songs that you go back to.
I'm typical of my age. I mean, a lot of my favorites are new, Marion Call Bandmade, Punch Brothers, really fairly new artists. But I'm very typical middle-aged, a very typical middle-aged person in that 9 times out of 10 when I bring up Spotify, it's 80s and early 90s. I listen to stuff from my teens and early 20s.
I mean, I like bringing the stuff back, definitely, But yeah, I also like, of course, seeking out new life and
Oh,
civilizations,
yeah.
as they say.
I do that too. I mean, most of my top five artists are fairly new. But when it comes down to it, and I'm just going to relax and put some music on, it's going to be older. It's going to be, 20, 30 years old.
Yeah, and that is, I mean, a lot of times when I'm working, so it has to just be something. If I'm like not completely bored, it has to be something that I can just get in a trance to.
I simply, the way I can simply explain it is, as much as I, might appreciate a gourmet meal, I lean into comfort food. Early 90s and 80s is comfort food musically for me. All right, so finally on to this week's album, which is from 1971, Aqualung by Jethro Tull. Jethro Tull are a progressive rock band formed in Blackpool, Lancashire in 1967, who are best known probably for the flute playing of frontman and primary songwriter Ian Anderson, and for a couple of songs on this week's album. Aqualung is the band's fourth studio album, and it's the one that started their shift toward progressive rock from their blues rock and jazz fusion beginnings. It's also not, unlike most people think, it's not a concept album.
Right, they have the two first two songs connecting,
Well,
and I'm not.
no, Ian Anderson has actually talked about this. He said that, he's basically said that just because three or four songs on the album share a theme, that doesn't make it a concept album. And it actually has two sides that have their own themes. So if anything, it's two concept EPs. They recorded their next album, Thick as a Brick, as a sort of spoof of concept albums.
Yeah, that backfired
They were kind of just, it was a middle finger to the people who thought, Aqualung was a concept album. You want to see a concept album? We'll give you a concept album.
because the reason why it backfired was a lot of people thought that was a concept album too. So it just dug them in deeper. It was just not a good idea.
Of course, Aqualung was released on March 19th, 1971, on Chrysalis slash Island Records in Europe, and Reprise in America, Japan, and Oceania. produced by Ian Anderson and Terry Ellis, and features Ian Anderson on lead vocals, acoustic guitar, and flute, Martin Barr on electric guitar and descant recorder, Jeffrey Hammond, credited as Jeffrey Hammond Hammond, I always got a kick out of that, on bass guitar, alto recorder, backing vocals, and odd voices, John Evan on piano, organ, and mellotron, Clive Bunker on drums and percussion, as well as Glenn Cornick on bass guitar. He played with the band at rehearsals for the album in June of 70, some of which may also have been recording sessions, particularly My God and Wondering Aloud. He's not credited on the albums, but he may be on there.
That's kind of weird, though, because, I mean, how do they not... I mean, wouldn't he come looking for a paycheck?
I don't know.
How do they prove if he was on bass or not, though?
Anyway, reminder, I don't edit any songs into our episodes for copyright reasons, but down in the description and on our blog at johnandscotto.com, that's John A-N-D Scotto, you'll find links to the album on Spotify and YouTube. On to the tracks, and on to side one, and for once I'm going to talk about the individual sides. Because yes, they have titles and themes. Side right. one is called Aqualung. Starts off with the title track, Aqualung, probably their most iconic song.
Yeah, I mean, what can you say, really? This is, I mean, and this is a masterpiece.
And typically, Ian Anderson writes all the songs. I called him the primary songwriter. He's really the only songwriter.
Yeah.
We reviewed Nightmare Before Christmas on the latest Zombie Takeout, and it's very much like Elfman was in Oingo Boingo. He wrote everything, everybody else just played it. Anderson wrote everything, the other guys just played it. The lyrics on this one, this was an exception. It was co-written, the lyrics were co-written by Ian Anderson and his wife at the time, Jenny Anderson, based on a photo of a homeless man that she had taken as a photography student.
And that's quite the alimony check, I'm sure.
Yeah. Apparently she wrote the first half of the lyric. But that riff is, and it's really not just a guitar riff. It's known as a guitar riff, but it's really the beginning of the vocal melody too. And it's just iconic.
I mean, Barr, was it Barr that you pronounced it?
Yeah, it's Barr, Martin Barr.
I just, what can you say about him?
An unsung guitar hero.
Jesus Christ.
He deserves as much credit as the Yardbirds Trinity. He's an amazing guitar player.
Like, did they have, like, Iommi replace him, like, later on, you know?
I don't remember. I think there were other guitar players. Like, and I think Ian Anderson was the only member of Jethro Tull who's done everything, who's been on every album.
Well, right. It became, like, almost an Alice Cooper situation where the band just became a person, you know?
But I think Barr's been there for most of it.
Yeah.
His guitar is just as much a part of it as Anderson's voice.
Right.
Speaking of which, Anderson is probably, I would say definitely my favorite vocalist. And he is just a hero of mine. Just every note he sings drips with attitude.
Right. He is truly an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as well as a singer.
Yeah, we've talked about, you know, singers who act in their, you know, in their vocal. No one does that better than Anderson.
Right.
But it starts with this iconic, heavy riff, but I love that you can hear an acoustic behind it.
Sometimes I would even say he might even get too much into character. You may even cross the line on some occasions, where it's like, okay, that's a bit much. But, I mean, it's still him, you know?
It's like Jeffrey Combs. He overacts, but it's fun.
Yeah, it's true. That's very true.
But
very
I love that you can hear the acoustic behind this enormous riff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just beautifully mixed. And the just abrupt change to that soft section.
I think, and this is why I had to listen to a different mix, and I wish I had some more time to prepare for this one, to have listened to it in a few other different ways. But I had never noticed until the first time I listened to this that they're also playing recorder along with that riff.
Okay, I didn't notice it, but it doesn't surprise me.
It is very much, I'd never noticed it before.
There's a lot of recorder on the album.
But yes, they're playing that riff on the recorder. Just think about how a recorder sounds.
Yeah.
And dun 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 dun. Only it's doo 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 doo.
And the Spotify version of the special edition or whatever version we listen to of this one has an interview with Anderson, about a 13-minute interview, and he said that those were just cheap recorders that a school would use.
Of course. Well, nobody makes a good
No,
recorder,
they
do
do
they?
actually. They're a nice wooden recorder.
No.
Yes, there are actually good quality recorders. It is a serious instrument.
That just can't be. Do they find the brown noise?
There are actually very expensive, nice wooden recorders. But they just use cheap plastic store, school, great grade school recorders, which amazes me given some of the playing on this album.
Well, I mean, this wasn't a big budget album. I mean, I'm kind of shocked that this was their fourth album, honestly. I did not know that. I assumed this was either their first or second.
And I think it was, well, I have it in my notes, the record label. The studio they were using was being shared by Zeppelin at the time.
Wow, and Zeppelin does come up in my notes later because I think there's something that Zeppelin might have borrowed from them.
There were two rooms in the studio. One was small room, one big room. Zeppelin booked it first, so they got the nice, intimate small room.
Of course.
Anderson basically hated the recording. The band pretty much hated recording this album because it was in this big room that was intended for orchestras and just didn't work for a rock band. But it comes in with this abrupt change where it gets very soft,
Yeah.
and there's this radio effect on Anderson's voice that stays up through like a line or two into the next section. It stays longer than you think it would.
Right.
And just for the people who don't speak British, I have to explain a dog end. There's a line, he bends to pick a dog end. A dog end is a cigarette butt with some unsmoked tobacco on it.
That makes sense. I mean, I've never really analyzed the lyrics all that much.
That line always jumped out at me before I knew what a dog end was.
Which is a shame because, I mean, especially this song itself, lyrically, it is just so bold, It's now I'm sure folk music has sung about homeless people in
Of
the
course.
past and the vagrant and the wanderer and stuff, but rock never really did it,
No.
It was never rock's thing. Rock was about, we're having a good time and this and this is just a slap in the face. Just, it's so real and gritty, yet at the same time it's so pompous. And that's Tull, it is so classical and folk, and it also it's just as heavy as Black Sabbath.
Yeah, of course. And the slow section builds into this, a little bit faster section, but his voice still remains affected for parts of that. So when
Yeah.
the effect does come off, it really grabs your attention.
Oh
You
yeah,
still
it
remember
is a
December's Foggy Freeze.
they are just making a splash with this intro track.
And it wasn't until I listened to it for this album, for this review, I should say, that I realized why it's called Aqualung.
Oh, the deep sea diver
Yeah.
sound,
Then you
the way he
snatch your
breathes.
rattling last breath with deep sea diver sounds. I
Yeah.
love this album. I love Tull. I've heard it a billion times. That I never connected deep sea diver sounds to Aqualung.
And the odd thing, I have always liked Tull, but I've never listened to this album. I mean, I've listened
Oh,
to
wow.
Aqualung, of course. I've listened to
Huh.
a couple
Well, yeah,
songs
everyone
off
knows
it.
Aqualung. There, I'm going to say you've heard this, obviously. You've heard Locomotive Breath. And I'm going to venture to say you've heard Cross-Eyed Mary.
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably it.
There's, I think, one other
Okay.
song.
So this is going to be a really interesting review for me because I know this album cold.
You know what? I don't think their entire catalog was on Spotify for a while. Like I had like their greatest hits kind of thing, so I went in that way.
I have MU and Original Masters. That's what sold me.
Yeah, Original Masters. That I mean, it was just such a great buy to get,
And this is actually the only other Tall album that the only actually full Tall album that I own, aside from the Best Of, is Aqualung, because it's just the classic.
I think I've listened to Thick as a Brick, but I don't think I've listened to any other Tall album all the way through.
Oh, wow. Now, I will admit the lyrics do get a bit repetitive, you know, after that, after the guitar solo, which is brilliant. They kind of bring back the same lyrics, kind of recycles them a bit.
Yeah, but I don't think that's a problem at all in this case, because it's just, it moves so quickly. You know, there's no way you get bored listening to the song.
Yeah, true. I'm just trying to nitpick anything I possibly can, because this is a fucking masterpiece. This album as a whole. And I love how the heavy riff comes back at the end.
Yeah.
It's just a complete restatement. On to track two, Cross-Eyed Mary. Little bit of trivia about this one. This was written by Tall frontman Ian Anderson, who has described the character of Mary as a schoolgirl prostitute type. She lives a wretched existence, offering her services to the dregs of humanity. Anderson says that the important issue in this song and the album as a whole is seeing the spirituality in people, even a prostitute. Said Anderson, quote, "There are these human types that would be thought to be undesirable and unpleasant, but are all God's creations one way or another. And there must be within these people some very essential humanity, even some goodness, some good side to their character or personality, which is laudable." I always thought this was about the church.
No. I mean,
I thought they were comparing the church to a prostitute.
Well, maybe in the second side.
Well, no, I thought this was one of the songs that fit into the criticism of the church, which is really just the second side. The first side, Aqualung, is about basically people on the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum.
Right, which is really unique for the time, I feel. Yeah.
He did not just one song, but an entire side of an album is about the disenfranchised.
I mean, it's kind of like Genesis took this like later on for the Lamb. Well, you could say Peter Gabriel took it because the rest just went along for the ride with him.
Right.
But they wanted something real and gritty that, you know, that this definitely had to have been an influence on that.
Yeah. I love the intro. It is iconic. It's just this repeated kind of fluttery flute riff over these chord changes. And the flute riff is the same as even as the chord changes, which sets up a really interesting contrast.
Right. I mean, it's classical, it's rock, it's tribal, it's jazz, all in the same thing.
And it just builds and builds. And there's this really tight interplay between the guitar and the organ in the verse.
Yeah.
I'm tempted to call this proto-metal.
Oh, no. The genre, and in fact, I bring this up, these guys really deserved that metal Grammy.
They got a Grammy years ago. I'm sure you've all heard about this, for Best Metal Artist.
Right.
For Crest of a Knave, I think it was.
I thought it might have been like a live album, actually.
Might have been. It was in the 80s, though, so it was around Crest of a Knave.
And that live album was fucking phenomenal, too. I remember that album as a kid. Probably my intro to them. But it's really the genre of metal that changed. Maybe it wasn't 89 metal, but they're certainly right along with Black Sabbath.
Yeah, they are contemporaries to Black Sabbath. I think they were a little bit before.
Probably around the same time, because I think Sabbath might have been 69.
Sabbath's first album was formed in 69, first album was 70, I believe.
Yeah.
So Tull was a little ahead of them.
Yeah. Well, I think they were moving into this metal.
Oh, around the same time as Sabbath came
around. Around the same time.
Right, okay.
And, I mean, the genre of metal changed, because if you listen to Sabbath now, it's not really what we would think metal.
No.
But back then, that sure as hell was metal. I mean,
and the genre of metal changed, just going back a couple of years for us, thanks to Lemmy.
Yeah.
You know, he sped everything up. Before then, metal was slow and prodding.
It was an offshoot of prog, really, in the end.
Acid rock, more so, I would say.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
it's all kind of muddled in there. But
let's be honest, those early Metallica albums were prog.
They were definitely prog.
Without keywords.
Yeah, that was prog. I mean, you have a bass player soloing, it's prog.
Right.
But metal as a whole, I would say Sabbath got it from acid rock.
Yeah.
And Hendrix, who was basically acid rock.
If you took the flute and recorders out,
yeah,
you would pretty much be listening to a Black Sabbath record or a Zeppelin record.
On the heavier stuff, yeah.
Zeppelin as, you know, a metal band, or right. Early metal.
Well, they were hard rock. That was always a very clear distinction for me. Sabbath was metal. Zeppelin was hard rock. You know.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to tell, tougher to tell back then.
But going back to the Car Said Mary, love how forward the bass is in verse two. Because in the first verse, it just kind of follows the guitar. It's very simple. Then the bass just comes alive in verse two. Love that. And this is our first flute solo. And it goes from a flute solo to a guitar solo, which is absolutely emblematic of Tal.
It is. He goes right in. He's playing right along with the flute on the fucking guitar.
Flute solo, guitar solo, there's a little crossover. That is Tal in a nutshell. At least this era.
I mean, the verse in this is straight up rock, if not metal, itself.
Yeah, it's proto metal. And I like how they kind of reference that repeated riff in the beginning at the end without quoting it.
Yeah.
They kind of do something very similar. And now on to track three. I'm going to venture to say you haven't heard this one, but you hadn't heard this one first.
No, before. I
haven't. Cheap Day Return. This was written by Ian Anderson, but of course, about visiting his father who was terminally ill at the time, or was dying at the time. Love the instrumental portion of this. Starts off with this kind of counterpoint between two guitars. And I just want to point out, Ian Anderson is credited with playing all the acoustics on this.
Oh, okay.
On the record. This is probably all Anderson, which is amazing. I never knew he was this talented of a guitarist.
I just assumed Barr was, good on...
I assumed it was Barr, at least the more complicated stuff, but only Anderson is credited with playing acoustic. But I love the instrumental portion. It's just complex and haunting. It's a beautiful mix of classical and folk. And then the lyrics come in, and it's about him visiting his father. And it's okay. I think it should have been an instrumental or developed into a full lyric, I think.
I mean, it's a nice interlude on the album.
It just kind of seems half-finished.
Yeah.
They couldn't really commit. This is my pick for weakest. Love the song. I mean, picking a weakest on this one, I'm still picking a favorite.
It's tough. You know, I thought I had a weakest on the first listen, but on the second listen, I was kind of getting into that too. So it's kind of like, ooh, I don't know.
Yeah, by weakest, it's like, how do you pick your least favorite of your children?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all still brilliant. On to track three, my favorite. On the album, Mother Goose. This is not only my favorite of the album, it's one of my favorite Tal songs, tied with War Child for my absolute favorite Tal song. I just love how his voice rides this line between pretty and sinister.
I mean, this is probably their folkiest on the album, I think.
And lyrics are just this pastiche of these bizarre characters. That he's walking past Hampstead Fair and he runs into these, bizarre fictional creatures or characters.
Right. And at first, the first listen, I was kind of disappointed on this because it was, I kept wanting to hear more Barr and more of the metal side. But in the second listen, just the whole back and forth with it was really, really entertaining.
This is one of those songs where it's just Anderson having fun.
Yeah.
You know, there's some really nice subtle percussion. And I love the Chicken Fancier verse. And the Chicken Fancier came to play with his long rat beard and his sister's weird. She drives a lorry, brace for truck. It's just the bizarre lyrics. He was just having fun with this one.
Yeah.
Great harmonies on the second and third choruses. Starting with the Long John Silver line. And I love the guitar interlude before the bass and electric guitar come in, because it kind of picks up partway through.
Yeah.
And just the trailing off recorders at the end. They almost sound backwards.
Song, yeah.
On to track five, Wondering Aloud, another favorite of mine. Really nice touching lyric, and just pretty melody. Just nice little, another one of the short interludes.
I almost picked this as a weakest, but I realized it was just because of the listing, because they had pretty much three acoustic in a row, and it was just kind of, you know, by this point, I was
you were getting,
getting a
tired
little
of
tired.
The basics. Yeah. Love
but
this
I don't
one.
know.
It's just
I don't know
really
if
pretty.
this is my weakest because I really liked it the second listen.
I like how the timing varies a little bit. They have a little fun with that because there's no percussion on it. Nice build to a piano that comes in, and then Mellotron comes in with these strings that just build it a little more. And I'm planning to get the last line tattooed on me. It's one of my favorite things ever written. And it's only the giving that makes you what you are.
Oh.
Some of Ian Anderson's finest writing.
They had a very King Crimson feel on this one.
Yeah, I can hear it. On to track six, Up to Me. Love the riff on this one. Love how the guitar, again, acoustic guitar is mixed in with electric really nicely.
Yeah, the riff is fucking fantastic on this.
And you've got these two acoustics playing against each other in the verse. And this is really kind of just about hanging out in a bar as a working class person dreaming about something better. There's a line about a silver cloud, which is a kind of Rolls Royce. One of the lyrics is I'm a common working man with a half of bitter bread and jam. Something about, and then something I would, lay one on you when the copper fades away. It's just sitting in a bar, getting into a fight, dreaming of a better life.
It's another one. I really wish, like on the first one, listen, I really wish I just went all in.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I listen to it again, I get the play back and forth, and it's just it's
tell
just
us all
wonderful.
About the subtlety.
Yeah.
There's a ton of subtlety in their music. I've heard Aqualung I don't know how many times, and I never noticed the recorders.
I never did either. I was like, wait, what?
Just a quick recommendation. You talk about going back and listening to things. If this at all appeals to you, just go to Spotify, go to the tall section, hit play.
Well, that's the problem. They have too many bonus tracks and stuff.
Well, that's true.
A pain in the ass.
Yeah, fair point.
I swear they didn't have this on though before, or I would have. I really would have assumed that I would have listened to their just did a whole catalog listen, which I've done with a number of bands.
Yeah. On to side two, titled "My God," starting with the song "My God," another favorite of mine.
Loved I think this might be my pick for favorite, honestly.
Loved the acoustic guitar part. Again, Anderson blew me away on that one. I had no idea he was that good. It's very classical sounding.
I think Zeppelin was listening closely and
on the beginning, yeah.
Took a little stuff from them.
I just love how dramatic it is once the actual song kicks in.
And then what about the crazy breakdown? You get this chorus in the middle.
And it's just, this is the point where you mentioned him overacting. I think he does on this one.
Oh, yeah.
But it works.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing left undone here.
And most of this side of the album is a criticism of the Church of England.
Yeah.
And what I find interesting about it is it's a criticism from someone who is clearly a believer.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think for me, as a screaming atheist, gives it more emotional weight.
Well, yeah, that's also, I mean, that's like Chesky's stuff. It's somebody like, tell me how to believe, how do I buy into this?
Yeah.
If I even really wanted to buy into it, tell me how to do that.
Because, it's not just a random criticism that I've heard a billion times before. It's someone who wants to, who is really rooting for the church, wants it to do right, but just is calling it out from inside.
Now, remember, there was a long, and of course, this is, what are we talking, 25 years ago. I did an Easter show, and I was looking for an Easter songs, and this definitely should have been it.
Yeah. This is kind of an interesting, unintentional good pick for our holiday episode.
Yeah.
For both themes on the album. Anderson describes himself as being somewhere between a deist and a pantheist. But he has said that the Christianity doesn't necessarily disagree with either of that. And I love it when the band kicks in. Because most of it is just piano and vocal.
Yeah.
And then the band kicks in about halfway through. And it's just, it's a kick in the head.
Oh, yeah.
Catches you completely off guard. Gonna quote lyrics again. I love this part. So lean upon him gently and don't call on him to save you from your social graces and the sins you used to wave. WAIVE.
Right.
His voice is just this great mix of grief and rage. You know, it's sad, but he's angry as well. And then we get another amazing flute and guitar trade off. And then, yeah, this Baroque section. You talked about the breakdown. I'm finally to that note.
Yes.
It just goes completely Baroque.
It's insane. It's just like... all I imagine was Robert Fripp listening to Skunk. Why the fuck didn't I think of that? Yeah.
Well, it's the classical influence.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, classical being an influence on Prague. These guys were classical folk.
I mean, rock. Emerson, Lake, and Palmer didn't even go here at this point, yeah. You know. I mean, they you know, covered classical music in rock form at that point. But
formal music was a huge influence on Tall, I think more so than any of the other prog bands.
Well, I don't know. ELP was very classical.
True.
They unironically did Jerusalem.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I know. It's a tough call between Lake and, or not Greg Lake. I would say probably Emerson.
Between Lake and Emerson. Yeah, of course.
And between Anderson and Emerson, who was more classically influenced? On to track 8, Hymn 43. This is another one that gets radio play a lot.
This is the one I had heard before, because this was the one you recommended for me to do on that Easter show.
Oh, okay. 25 okay. years ago. I probably didn't know My God at the time. And Anderson has described this as a blues for Jesus, about the gory glory seekers who use the name as an excuse for a lot of unsavory things. You know, hey, Dad, it's not my fault. The missionaries lied. He does exactly.
This is like Chesky's latest single, too. Mm-hmm. Like, Christ of the Cross is about, you know, the state murdered him. Uh-huh. And then they turned around and used him.
And Anderson does a really interesting thing at the beginning. He comes in vocally on the upbeat. The vocal starts at a weird spot, because normally they start on the downbeat.
I don't know if I've ever noticed that. That's so.
And maybe I only notice it because I'm a musician, but it just, the vocal comes in a weird spot.
I'm trying to think of how a vocal would normally start.
He drops Father on the downbeat.
Yeah.
So, oh Father, my Father, whatever the opening line, the first word is on an upbeat. It's just an unusual thing for a vocal to do. Really like the piano on this one. This is really a piano song.
Yeah.
The bass on the riff is great, too, because it's this sort of... He does a similar thing on Locomotive Breath, where it's a sort of pulsing, sliding bass part. And this is where you get Anderson's sarcasm. He is a sarcastic motherfucker at times. You know, and the unsung Western hero, he killed an Indian or three, then he made his name in Hollywood to set the white men free.
So far ahead of his time.
Oh, absolutely. And a great solo from Martin Barr. Again, a criminally underrated guitar player. Or not underrated, but unsung. Because he's not one of those guitar players who gets a lot of attention. On to track 9, Slipstream. This one is just really pretty, very classical influenced. And this really pretty music and vocal melody contrasts with this really... critical lyrics.
I normally find these interludes, throwaway songs, just easy to say, oh, that one's my weakest because it's an interlude.
Yeah.
But they just work here.
Yeah. The lyric, it's very short. I can quote it offhand. While the lush separation unfolds you and the products of wealth, not offhand, I am reading it, push you along on the bow wave of their spiritless undying selves, and you press on God's waiter your last dime as he hands you the bill, and you spin the slipstream, tideless, unreasoning, paddle right out of the mess, and you paddle right out of the mess. It's the rich buying themselves into high positions in the church.
He gets in and out, saying what needs to be said. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a minute and 13 seconds is all you really need.
Yeah. And there's some really nice atonal strings at the end. Probably a mellotron, because there are no string credits on the album.
Oh, yeah, yeah, mellotron. But
I don't know how we detuned the mellotron. On to track 10, Locomotive Breath. I've got a chunk of trivia on this one.
Ever wonder what if Billy Joel,
I've never known what this
song... New York State of Mind.
I've never known what this song was about until today.
Oh, really?
It was inspired by Anderson's concern regarding overpopulation. He explained in a Rolling Stone interview early this year, quote, "It was my first song that was perhaps on a topic that would be a little more appropriate in today's world. It was about the runaway train of population growth and capitalism. It was based on those sorts of unstoppable ideas. We're on this crazy train. We can't get off of it." Ozzy. Where's it going? Bear in mind, of course, when I was born in 47, the population of planet Earth was slightly less than a third of what it is today. So it should be a sobering thought that in one man's lifetime, our planetary population has more than tripled. You'd think population growth would have brought prosperity, happiness, food, and a reasonable spread of wealth, but quite the opposite has happened. And this is happening even more to this day. Without putting it into too much literal detail, this is what lay behind that song.
Wow, that I did not know. I mean, I knew there was, a sense of depravity, and just emptiness. The all-time loser.
His children jumping off at stations one by one.
Yeah. Well, it just adds
so much context to the song. And this one, again, is just iconic. This is one of the two songs that I said they're known for one or two, best known for two songs on this album. This is the other one.
Yeah, this is just so fucking good, this song.
It's absolutely iconic. And it opens with this really soft interplay between the piano and guitar. That's kind of this calm before the storm.
Right. It starts off like Billy Joel. Yeah, and yeah. It's like Paige Hamilton.
It's just kind of in free time. They kind of play off of each other, kind of duel, and then this blues groove kind of comes in. They play together, and then it all sort of explodes.
It has this bouncy bass that goes to it too.
And yeah, this bass slides. I love the bass slides.
Right.
And again,
I would characterize it more as bouncy, but yeah, I could see how that's a slide.
I only say slide because I was watching a live version. for the video this week, I put out a live version of Aqualung, but I had considered a live version of this one. And I'm watching John Hammond play, and he's actually sliding on the bass.
You would think he'd be the keyboard player if
yeah, he Hammond, that yeah. name.
But you know.
It explodes into this immensely heavy riff. But again, like Aqualung, you can still hear the acoustic behind it.
Yeah.
I love how they mix the acoustics. It does get a bit repetitive because it is really just this one riff. But it serves the point of the song, especially now you know what it's about.
I mean, it's only a 4-minute song.
Yeah.
I mean, it's radio friendly,
And it's overplayed, but still good. How many songs can you say that about that you still enjoy even though you've heard them billions of times? Again, we get another great flute solo.
Crazy flute solo.
And I love how he makes these sort of sounds, vocal sounds, in the middle of his solos.
Well, the way they've mixed this, you can hear him
breathing
and you know.
But he just lets out this kind of yeet in the middle of the solo, which I love.
Which, I remember in past mixes, you could hear the...
Love that part. And knowing what it's about now, I listened to it after I read that. And
I've got to listen to it again.
Brings so much to the song. And it's really the one exception on this side of the album. That's not about the church.
Well, you know, I had just put it in that context that it was about the church because, you know, the loser is still picking up Gideon's Bible and
Yeah, there's a
still
reference
trying.
to Gideon's Bible. I probably never quite noticed it as a difference.
And the stations I'd always assumed were the stations of
Yeah,
the
yeah.
cross.
There might be some cross-pollination there. There might be a few ideas in it.
But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how that ties in with the overpopulation, but I guess the church has encouraged overpopulation.
Yeah, well, the stations, I think, are just literal train stations.
Yeah, I'd assume they
Children
were stations of the
jumping off at
cross.
stations one by one, kind of expanding.
Yeah.
Expanding the population throughout the world. The Gideon's Bible line, I should have looked at the lyrics. I don't know what the exact line is about Gideon's Bible.
Picks up Gideon's Bible, opens up to page one.
Okay.
Thank God. Oh, I can't remember the
Thank God
exact
he stole the
lyric.
handle on the train. It won't stop going, no way to slow down. That's the one
Yeah.
repeated line in the chorus. That's the chorus. On to track 11, the final song, Wind Up. This is the perfect closer to the album. Starts off this nice, pretty song, piano and vocal, with this earnest yet biting lyric about the church. When I was young and they sent me off to school with their half-assed smiles and the book of rules, I didn't mind if they'd groom me for success or if they said that I was just a fool.
And I mean, it's a multi-directional song. And I mean, it's great that I've got to hear this, but it kind of was just like, I wish I'd heard this earlier in life.
This is one of those I was talking about how his earnestness and the fact that he's legitimately a believer with these concerns, it even moves an atheist like me,
Yeah.
and then it gets heavy.
Yeah.
And this is another case of proto-metal. It is just straight up metal.
I think I had heard like a live version of this sometime long
Nice.
ago.
And there's a lyric in here that chokes me up every fucking time. And I actually mishear the first line of it every time. The line I hear is, "How do you dare to tell me that I'm not part of the song?"
Huh.
Which, for me, being disabled, which kills me. The full line as written. How do you dare to tell me that I'm my father's son when that was just an accident of birth? I'd rather look around me, compose a better song, because that's the honest measure of my worth. Now,
Wow.
but that I'm not part of the song, to me as a disabled person, really resonated. But the lyric as written, and this is not Ian Anderson's intention, I'm sure, but after a year plus of therapy, how do you dare to tell me that I'm my father's son when that was just an accident of birth? That just, I honestly cried listening to this today.
Wow.
This is again another one of my absolute favorites, and that couplet just kills me every
It,
fucking time.
yeah, you put it in that context, that is just God, that is damn amazing.
And this is obviously it's about the church in Anderson's case. He was writing about the church,
Well, yeah.
in two contexts or be it just kills me.
Yeah.
And this again, one of my few rare criticisms on the album because it is a fucking masterpiece. The solo does get a bit meandering. It's not Barr's finest moment.
I just like hearing him play, though. I mean, I, you know, wish
It
they'd
just
let him go a little freer on this.
he just gets a little bit. It didn't need a solo. He just kind of fills it's filler to me. But I love how it gets soft at the end. Again,
Yeah.
just to drive home the point. And it ends like it started. It's just
Right.
just the piano and the vocal and this earnest plea. Foregone conclusion. Considering it is, we both named it as our favorite album of the year.
Yeah.
Obviously we both recommend it.
I don't know if I would put it at my in my top spot. I mean, it's certainly in my top five, though.
What was your favorite of the year? Of all time? It's, yeah, same. It's probably in my top five. I didn't include it in my Desert Island Discs. I have that listed on a Google Doc, but I need to add it now.
Well, I went in chronological order for my
Oh,
list.
okay. Right.
So, I mean, it definitely is in the top five, and I don't know if I could pick it. You know, honestly, it does say a lot, because I think in the other four that would have been in my top five, I could pick weak tracks. I don't know if I could pick one on this, though. Yeah. Like, it would have to be one of those interludes.
Yeah, I strain to pick a weak one. Even though, as much as I love Cheap Day Return, I just think it's a little incomplete.
I mean, maybe Wandering Aloud? I don't know. I think Wandering Aloud would probably get it. And then there's the struggle of picking the strongest. Do you go with Aqualung, which of course is the masterpiece? I really enjoyed My God, though. And, of course, Locomotive Breath is just... it's just outrageous. It's fucking incredible.
There are two Saul songs I listen to on a very regular basis. The one I picked, I'm blanking on the name. How did I...
Honestly, my favorite Tall song still, though, would be Living in the Past.
Interesting. Not one of my favorites. That's an interesting call. But right. Mother Goose and War Child are the two Tall songs that I listen to a ton. So, and obviously, only one of them's on this album, so that had to be my favorite.
And I think why that one has always been one of my favorites, because the flute really works on that song. So well, like, it all just comes together, and he's, you know, just grooving with the flute. But on this, you know, I just can't get away from Locomotive Breath. I think I'll pick that as my choice.
They're all good. There's no bad choice on this one.
Yeah.
That's it for Aqualung. Well, just to capper, like, Calva Louise was my favorite for the year. And then we got to Fred Schneider. And Fred Schneider edged them out. Because it was just such a great surprise.
Wait, you picked Fred Schneider as your favorite for the year?
No, it was.
Oh, okay.
Up until we came back from the break, Calva Louise was a solid favorite of the year.
Yeah.
We get to Fred Schneider, it was just such a great surprise. He edged them out. We get to this week, and Tall just decimated everybody. Like, I didn't even need to list a top 10. Like, I could have just said this one. This is all 10. And that's unfortunately it for Aqualung. Until next year, when we'll be revealing Blue Valentine by Tom Waits. Finally getting to some Tom Waits. Tom Waits is someone I've only recently developed an appreciation for. It took me a long time to get what he does.
Musically, it's really hard to get into, but I mean, it's his personality, though, that just leads into it.
I just didn't appreciate his voice until recently. And this album opens with a cover of Somewhere from West Side Story.
That's great.
If you don't get Tom Waits, listen to that cover, you'll get Tom Waits.
Yeah.
Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.